You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hello and welcome to Denver Metro News, read by Matt. Our headlines today are CU Denver grads create phishing safety software, Mayor names Brad Buchanan to serve as interim planning director, and NFL legend Champ Bailey honors most positive Colorado student athletes, followed by miscellaneous articles. We start with the Denver Herald-Dispatch, week of June 12, 2025. CU Denver grads create phishing safety software. Photo accompanying is two young women in college graduation cap and gowns in front of a CU banner, smiling for the camera. The caption reads, Devin and Ashlyn Haney at their graduation from the University of Colorado Denver in May 2025, courtesy of Paul Weidlin. Ashlyn and Devlin Haney are twins and business partners. Article by Elizabeth Slay, E. Slay, at coloradocommunitymedia.com. In May, twin sisters Ashlyn and Devin Haney graduated from the University of Colorado Denver with degrees in computer science. And along with their diplomas, the sisters walked away with an innovative solution to one of today's most popular digital threats, phishing emails. For their senior capstone project, the sisters created PhishSense, which is an AI-powered Gmail add-on that not only detects phishing attempts, but also teaches users how to recognize them. What makes it unique is the focus on both detection and user education, Ashlyn Haney said. Instead of just flagging emails, it provides clear bullet-pointed reasons, which are generated by a large language model, and explains why an email might be phishing. This empowers users to recognize red flags themselves, increasing long-term security awareness. CU Denver Director of Public Relations Jennifer Woodruff said that in 2024, phishing scams affected 94% of organizations and cost Americans over $16 million. While large companies often have cybersecurity teams in place, the average person is frequently left without the tools or knowledge to spot these threats. That's exactly the gap the Haney sisters aim to fill. Most tools rely on a security team to review suspicious emails, Ashlyn Haney said. The goal was to create something that not only detects threats, but also teaches users how to identify them, making email security more transparent and accessible. Devin Haney added that she and sister wanted to address the growing issue of email phishing, especially as AI-generated scams become more sophisticated. The idea stemmed from combining our interest in cybersecurity and learning to create something more user-friendly and educational. Devin Haney said, PhishSense is currently a prototype, but the twins are working to finalize its features and hope to explore a full launch soon. From Englewood to innovation, the Haneys credit CU Denver with giving them the skills and confidence to take on big challenges. CU Denver is unlike most universities, no ivory tower here, Ashlyn Haney said. Our focus was always on practical experience and job market readiness. Both sisters have secured jobs in the tech field. Ashlyn Haney will be starting as an associate security engineer at Ibotta, while Devin Haney is set to join Quizlet as a machine learning engineer in July. Passion for tech, people, and progress. Beyond their technical acumen, both sisters share a passion for problem-solving and helping others stay safe in an increasingly digital world. Cybersecurity is always changing, which means there's always something new to learn, Ashlyn Haney said. It's rewarding to build tools that can make a real difference in people's digital safety. Devin Haney echoed the sentiment, I love that cybersecurity and tech are constantly evolving fields that challenge us to stay curious and creative, she said. Solving real problems and building tools that make a difference is incredibly rewarding. As they prepare to turn the page to the next chapter, the sisters reflect with both pride and excitement. Graduating feels both exciting and surreal, Ashlyn Haney said. It's a moment of accomplishment after years of hard work, but also a turning point. There's a lot of pride in what's been accomplished, especially with regards to our degree and involvement. Devin Haney added that the sisters' graduation marks an end to this chapter in their lives, but also the start of new opportunities for which they can apply everything they've learned to real-world challenges. Looking ahead, With their futures mapped out and fish sense on the verge of its next phase, the Haneys are optimistic about what's to come. "The future holds a lot of unknowns, but that's part of what makes it so exciting," said Devin Haney. "I'm excited to keep learning, building meaningful tech, and contributing to a better world." Ashlyn Haney said she is looking forward to diving deeper into the cybersecurity field and making an impact on the industry. "The future holds endless opportunities to keep learning, stay challenged, and help others navigate an increasingly digital world safely," Ashlyn Haney said. Mayor names Brad Buchanan to serve as Interim Planning Director by Eric Hines. Eric@cotln.org. To quickly but temporarily fill the role that leads Denver's Department of Community Planning and Development, Mayor Mike Johnston has named Brad Buchanan, the CEO of the National Western Center Authority, as the interim director. "We are thrilled Brad is willing to return to lead CPD in an interim capacity," Johnston said in a press release. "Having served as executive director from 2014 to 2018, Brad knows the agency and the team extremely well. His deep expertise in Denver's permitting and development processes gives me full confidence in his ability to guide CPD forward. As we continue overhauling our permitting processes and delivering services to our community." Buchanan will begin his dual roles on June 10th. The National Western Center Authority is a nonprofit that programs, operates, and maintains the National Western Complex. The authority has a 13-person board of directors. The authority was approved by the Denver City Council on a 9-4 vote to receive up to $812 million to further develop the National Western Center, which will include a new equestrian center, hotel, community center, and other projects in an effort to enhance the experience of the site that hosts the annual National Western Stock Show. The City Council approved spending $23.3 million through bond funding over the next 35 years, with an assumed interest rate of 4.92%. "I've got a fantastic team in both places," Buchanan said. "I know the teams at the National Western Center and Community Planning and Development. I'm working with some amazing individuals, and I've had some conversations with the board and my team about this possibility, and everyone was very supportive. Every manager manages scope and projects beyond their own capacity. That's what management is all about. I'm comfortable with managing a lot of spinning plates, and that's what I'll be doing here." In leading both the authority and the city department in charge of approving the developments his current organization is seeking, Buchanan said there will be times when he'll have to step back to avoid conflicts of interest. "I've thought about that. I think there's really only one area of personal conflicts, and that's if we're applying for a building permit while I'm the executive director," he said. I'd been in this position for almost 5 years previously, but the executive director is not involved the day-to-day of the review process, and I'll keep my distance from that. I have a high bar for our integrity and our team's integrity, and I know what lines not to cross." A comprehensive search for the permanent executive director of the department will be conducted, Johnston's office stated. Buchanan said he expects the search to last about 6 months. Buchanan said he wants to continue to improve approval timings for building permit applications, something Johnston has highlighted as a priority in his administration, as well as improve the customer experience of the process. He said he also plans to catch up with everything the department is handling at this time and help the mayor with selecting a new permanent director. Part of the council's decision included the efforts of the Globeville, Elyria and Swansea Community Investment Fund, a program established by the authority to direct money toward a revolving loan fund for the purchase of collectively owned land, homes, and cooperative businesses in the GES neighborhoods. The fund seeks $16 million from allocated money to the authority in order to accomplish those goals. "Last night's vote just laid out the work that needs to be done with the Community Investment Fund," Buchanan said. "We all heard loud and clear that there are significant needs in GES, and that's what we have to do every day to partner with them and increase that revenue stream and apply those funds to address neighborhood priorities and needs." Shannon Hoffman, The project manager for the Community Investment Fund said the organization is looking forward to working with Buchanan on the future phases of the National Western Center. "We know he has a lot of knowledge from his previous experience in CPD," Hoffman said. The Community Planning and Development Executive Director was Manish Kumar until May 31st, when he announced his departure after 13 months at the position. Kumar's last day was Friday, June 6th. Johnston announced in April, by executive order, the creation of the new Denver Permitting Office to overhaul Denver's permitting and development approval processes, making building in the city easier by streamlining permit review timelines and coordinating across city departments, according to the announcement. We move on to NFL legend Champ Bailey honors most positive Colorado student athletes. Positive Athlete Awards, scholarships to high-character high school athletes. Accompanying photos are Champ Bailey with a young man, a teenager, holding a giant check for $2,500. And another photograph, with the caption reading, Stanley Lake High School's Liam Graham was awarded a $2,500 scholarship for being the most positive male student athlete in 2025. Here he is, pictured with NFL legend Champ Bailey, who is the lead athlete for the Positive Athlete Organization. Second photograph shows a young woman with a shaved head, or a bald head, smiling and holding a framed certificate, and posing with Champ Bailey. The caption reads, Lakewood High School's Megan Waters poses with Pro Football Hall of Famer Champ Bailey at the Douglas County School District Legacy Campus on June 2nd. Waters was recognized as one of the most positive female student athletes in Colorado. Article by John Renfro. john@cotln.org. High school athletes, two coaches, and an athletic director were honored for being the most positive in Colorado at the Douglas County School District Legacy Campus in Lone Tree, June 2nd. Pro Football Hall of Famer and Broncos legend Champ Bailey is the Positive Athlete Organization's lead athlete. Bailey helped to recognize the top seven male and female athletes in high school sports who displayed the highest character and generated overall positivity on and off the field. The full list of recipients includes students from schools across Colorado, from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and Breckenridge to La Junta. Those honored are Alex Beasley, Lewis Palmer, Monument, Avery Lehman, Pooter, Fort Collins, Jaden Francis, Elizabeth, Jay Peltier, Coach, Summit, Breckenridge, Catherine Lork, Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado Springs, Kevin Prostner III, Rangeview in Aurora, Kinsley Mayo, La Junta Junior Senior, La Junta, Liam Graham, Stanley Lake, Westminster, Megan Waters, Lakewood, Peyton Marrero, Strasburg, Ray Lopez, Coach, Abraham Lincoln in Denver, Rhett McDonald, Wiley, from Wiley, Roxanne Cerna, an athletic director, Centennial, in San Luis. Ryan Cornell, Longmont. Sage Atkins, Rock Canyon, Highlands Ranch. Simon Lunsford, Green Mountain, in Lakewood. And Staya Yohe Savage, George Washington, in Denver. I'd seen their positive athlete nominations and bios, but meeting and celebrating the winners in person exceeded all expectations, Bailey said. It's easy to see why they are the future leaders in the communities and the workforce. I'm excited to follow them as they lean in to take advantage of the ever-growing resources offered by positive athletes. Not just to winners, but to all nominees. More than 440 nominations from coaches, principals, athletic directors, teachers, and parents were submitted for the Positive Athlete Program statewide, representing 197 different public and private high schools, equivalent to 53% of all Colorado high schools with formalized athletics programs. Nominations covered all 27 state-sanctioned sports as well as esports, archery, equestrian, martial arts, motocross, ultimate, unified sports, and more. Considerations for awards included if students displayed how positive athletes, quote, operate, That's an acronym, OPERATE. Optimistic, put team first. Encouraging, respectful, admits imperfections, true heart for others, and embraces service. 5 scholarships were awarded, totaling $8,000. Stanley Lake High School's Graham won the Male Operate Award, while Lehman from Poudre won the Female Operate Award. Each received $2,500 toward their chosen academic institution or trade school. Additionally, Mayo McDonald and Yohei Savage received Positivity Champ Awards, including a $1,000 scholarship. I think that being recognized as a positive athlete really gave me more confidence, not only in my athletics, but also in my everyday life. Like, I was being seen for the work I was putting into my everyday life, and my positivity through times of difficulty and struggle, said Waters from Lakewood. I loved being able to meet the other kids and parents being awarded, because you can really tell that it's a good group of kids, and they were all raised by incredible people. They are all so kind. Nominations will reopen in the fall for the next school year. However, Positive Athlete is currently taking pre-nominations at www.positiveathlete.org, which will trigger an automatic reminder when nominations reopen. The following page contains an advertisement op-ed for Golden Real Estate's Broker Associates. Golden Real Estate, hometown service delivered with integrity, promoting and modeling environmental responsibility. Jim Smith, broker owner, 303-525-1851. Email jim@goldenrealestate.com. Another advertisement, Tour the Flaming Gorge, full-day bus tour. Travel along an all-American road with canyon overlooks, scenic valley vistas, and a 500 two-foot dam. Tickets $68, full-day bus tour, lunch included. Call 307-382-2538 for more info. Explore Wyoming, Rock Springs and Green River. ExploreWY.com. Bus tours originate in Rock Springs, Wyoming. Colorado experts say vaccination is strongest defense against measles. A photograph of the building UC Health Highlands Ranch Hospital is seen, with the caption, "Various locations across Douglas County provide measles vaccinations." A photo by Haley Lena. Article also by Haley Lena. hlena@coloradocommunitymedia.com. With confirmed measles cases popping up across the Denver metro area, here's what you need to know about the infectious disease and what to do if you believe you have been exposed. With more than 1,000 measles cases confirmed nationwide, there have been about a dozen confirmed in Colorado as of June 4th. According to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, these cases have been confirmed in Aurora, including Children's Hospital Colorado, Greenwood Village, Denver, Evergreen, Colorado Springs, Grand Junction, Glendale, and Windsor. In addition to the department collaborating with municipal partners at Metro Denver Partnership for Health to deliver information, Laura Larson, the Assistant Director for Community Health for the county, said its epidemiologists have been working with child care facilities and the school district to educate and inform families with unvaccinated children. We are working closely with the CDPHE in preparation for the managing any measles exposures in the county, Larson said. Signs, symptoms, and who to call. Measles is a highly contagious airborne disease. The virus spreads if an infected person coughs or sneezes onto someone else, or touches a surface in which another person touches the same surface. Additionally, if a person breathes in air in the room up to 2 hours after a person with measles spent time in, the person can contract the disease. According to state law, illnesses including measles must be reported. Symptoms appear 1 to 2 weeks after being exposed. First signs include a runny nose, cough, red or watery eyes, and a fever up to 104 degrees. White spots in the mouth can appear about 2 to 3 days after the first signs appear, and raised bumps atop red spots occur a few days after that. Measles can cause other severe illnesses and long-term complications such as hearing loss, pneumonia, lung damage, and brain swelling. Daniel Pastula, the chief of neuroinfectious diseases and global neurology at UC Health, added that it has the ability to hide in the brain and cause dementia. The disease also increases a person's risk of contracting other illnesses and having other infections. Measles like to infect some of your memory immune cells, said Pastula. It can wipe out protection against other infections that you may have had before. While there is no specific treatment for measles, experts are warning people about taking vitamin A in an attempt to prevent the disease because high levels of the vitamin can be toxic to the liver. Report an illness at tinyurl.com/doug-co-health-report. The MMR vaccination. Experts say the strongest defense against measles is being vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, which can prevent measles, mumps, and rubella. There is another vaccine called MMRV, which includes prevention for varicella. Pastula said since 1989, the recommendation has been for children over the age of one to get two doses of the live measles vaccine, and they will be, quote, good for life, unquote. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that children get the first dose of the MMR vaccine between 12 and 15 months old, and the second dose between ages 4 and 6. However, the vaccine doesn't prevent an individual from getting measles. One dose of the vaccine is 93% effective, and two doses is 97% effective. If a vaccinated individual gets measles, Pastula said, they will most likely develop milder symptoms and be less likely to have severe side effects. Vaccines aren't necessarily designed to prevent you from getting sick. They're designed to keep you out of the hospital, Pastula said. The National Foundation for Infectious Diseases states that about 1 in 5 unvaccinated people in the United States who contracts measles will be hospitalized. Also, if an unvaccinated individual is exposed to measles, they can most likely get vaccinated within 72 hours. However, pregnant women, immunocompromised individuals, and infants under the age of 1 are unable to get the measles vaccine. Samuel Dominguez, professor of pediatric infectious diseases at Children's Hospital Colorado, said that while the vaccine is safe, infants under the age of 1 already received immunity from their mother's antibodies. These antibodies can interfere with the infant's ability to respond to the vaccine. When you're trying to evaluate whether to get vaccinated against measles or not, you're not only protecting yourself, you're protecting other people, and potentially other people that you love, Pastula said. If people are planning on traveling outside of the country, Dominguez said, infants between 6 and 11 months should get a dose before they go. Once they return, they should still get the two recommended doses. For more information about what to know when traveling, visit cdc.gov/measles/travel/index.html. How did we get here? Pastula called the highly contagious disease an ancient virus. In 1912, measles became a national epidemic in the United States. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, an average of 6,000 measles-related deaths were reported each year within the first decade. Before a vaccine became available in 1963, it was estimated to infect 3 to 4 million people in the U.S. each year. However, an improved vaccine was developed in 1968, which is the vaccine that is available today. By 1981, the number of reported cases was 80% less compared to the year before. Then in 2000, the disease was declared eliminated from the U.S. Pastula said despite measles cases occurring every year since then, most doctors have never seen an active case, including himself. But, unfortunately, we're sliding back into the history books, Pastula said. The following is a full-page advertisement for the Renaissance Fair, Renaissance Festival, Colorado. The Renaissance is back. Return to the magic and mystique of the Renaissance. Opening weekend, June 14th and 15th. 8 magical weekends, June 14th through August 3rd, 2025, Saturdays and Sundays only, 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. www.coloradorenaissance.com. Free parking, open rain or shine, no pets please. Sponsored by Coors Light, CBS Colorado, Pepsi, King Soopers, and Sunbelt. the photographs in the ad show a falconry demonstration. There's a jousting competition, man on a horse with a jousting pole in full armor. There is a woman dressed as a living statue, painted all white. A man playing the bagpipes. A medieval-style castle with people sitting on the lawn having a picnic. And folks dressed up in period costume. Next advertisement is Go Wild for Front Range Air Quality. Turn off the engine when you're parked to reduce ground-level ozone. Created from pollutants like car exhaust, ozone is the Front Range's biggest air quality issue and a leading cause of respiratory problems. Simple steps, betterair.org. Know when it matters most. Text BetterAirCO to 21000 to sign up for ozone alerts. Next article, Denver home prices are unchanged as thousands of listings pile up. There are more homes on the market now than any time since 2011. The accompanying photograph is a home with a yard in disarray, suggesting it has been unattended for a while. It has a for sale sign in the front yard. And the caption reads, a home for sale in Denver's Whittier neighborhood, December 4th, 2024. Article by Andrew Kenny, Denverite. There were nearly 13,600 homes for sale in the 11-county metro area at the end of May. That's the highest number since 2011. A sign that home buyers are hesitant to take what the market is offering. The mismatch between supply and demand means the Denver market looks very different than in recent years. More people are selling homes than buying them. Just about 4,000 sales were closed in May, even as nearly 7,300 new homes hit the market, according to Denver Metro Association of Realtors. It's still possible to sell a home in Denver, especially for the right price and location. In fact, if a home does sell, it typically takes only a couple weeks. But that statistic excludes the homes that aren't selling. Many properties are going unsold for months. The average unsold home has been sitting on the market for 45 days. The number of people selling their homes isn't abnormally high, appearing fairly consistent with recent years. But the number of buyers has dropped significantly from the 2010s and pandemic years. Many are hesitant to pay high prices at high interest rates. Despite the lack of buyers, the median price for single-family homes rose by about $5,000 to $665,000. The prices of townhomes and condos also increased. Those who do buy are looking for the strongest offerings at the best prices. They are increasingly likely to back out of a deal over inspection issues, according to DMAR. Unlike a few years ago when some buyers agreed to skip inspections altogether. However, there is a sign of a little movement in the market. Until now, it looked like the spring sales season had peaked early, with the number of completed sales dropping instead of growing from March through May. But the number of pending sales, those that are in progress but not yet completed, ticked up at the end of May. This story is from Denverite, a nonprofit Denver news source affiliated with CPR News. Used by permission. For more and to support Denverite, visit denverite.com. Schools Consider Financial Literacy Curriculum by Susie Glassman. Susie at cotln.org. Forget balancing a checkbook. Today's teens need to know how to avoid identity theft, decode a credit score, and figure out if that buy now, pay later plan is actually worth it. With a new state law requiring all Colorado high school students to complete a course in financial literacy beginning with students in the ninth grade on or after September 1st, 2026, educators now face a practical challenge. How do you design a course that prepares 21st century teens to make smart financial choices in a world of skyrocketing rents, digital wallets, student loans, and TikTok stock tips? The law, House Bill 25-1192, mandates a semester-long course in personal finance literacy for every public school student beginning with the class of 2028. but it leaves the details up to the local school districts, many of which are still figuring out what today's students need most. The basics of budgeting and savings, yes, but also how to navigate the gig economy, manage online spending, and protect themselves from increasingly sophisticated financial scams. What the law requires and what it doesn't. While the law sets a content requirement, it allows schools to integrate the financial literacy standards into an existing course rather than create a new standalone class. But students must understand and practice filling out the federal or state financial aid form, FAFSA or CAFSA. FAFSA or CAFSA, unless they and their parents opt out. Colorado has one of the lowest FAFSA completion rates in the country, according to the Colorado Department of Higher Education. This means Colorado students are missing out on significant amounts of federally available grant money. The law doesn't include a standardized curriculum or end-of-course exam. Instead, it points to existing high school standards last updated in 2020. As the foundation, those standards cover budgeting and saving, credit and debt management, and understanding taxes. But they also include topics like risk management and insurance fraud prevention, and identity protection and financial decision-making and planning for college. Each district will determine how to implement the course, whether as a graduation requirement embedded in current offerings or as a standalone class. What's useful for teens in 2025? Annalise Elrod, Chief Operating Officer of Westera Credit Union, says the curriculum must go far beyond checkbook math to prepare students for real-life financial challenges that include understanding how credit cards work, budgeting realistically, and navigating everything from financial aid to digital payment scams. Budgeting by available balance is one of the most common mistakes we see young people make, Elrod said. They don't understand the difference between their current balance and what's pending. It can lead to overdrafts or worse. She said teens should learn to read a pay stub, build a credit score, and avoid scams on payment apps like Venmo and Cash App. Lessons should also guide them through how to evaluate financial decisions, such as whether to rent an expensive apartment or sign up for a buy now, pay later plan. Even understanding basic investment like what a Roth IRA is or how to open an interest-generating savings account can give them a huge head start, Elrod said. Elrod said she was especially glad to see FAFSA covered in the new requirement. That knowledge is something you just don't intuitively understand, and it's a very convoluted maze, she said. If we're doing it for that reason, bravo. Additionally, she emphasized that understanding FAFSA and student loans is crucial, as many students miss out on financial aid by skipping the application process, which can leave them paying off debt when well into the future. While today's teens may be more aware of traditional scams than older generations, Elrod said, they're often more vulnerable to savvy marketing and high-pressure sales tactics. Marketers are very good at making it feel good and immediate, she said. And kids are all about that. Keeping teens engaged in a dry subject. Teenagers may not be thrilled about taking a required money class, but educators can keep them engaged with real-world scenarios, Elrod said. That starts with relevance. They're not going to understand purchasing a house. They are going to understand going out to dinner with friends or buying new clothes, she said. Making the examples relevant helps students connect the dots. Elrod's team at Westera Credit Union offers a classroom simulation that gives students a job, a salary, and bills to manage, and then throws high-pressure sales pitches their way. It's one thing to talk about budgeting, she said. It's another to experience the consequences of blowing your budget on an apartment with killer mountain views and realizing you can't afford to eat. When students walk through those decisions, Elrod said, the lessons tend to stick. You can tell them they need to budget, but letting them feel what it's like to make the wrong choice is much more effective. What parents can do at home. Financial education doesn't have to stop at school. Elrod encourages parents to involve teens in family budgeting, talk openly about money, and consider opening joint accounts or debit cards when they're ready. Every student is different. Some are ready at 10, others not until 16, she said. The key is creating habits early and making the conversation feel relevant. Elrod recommends apps that help families gamify chores, savings, and spending. Some allow parents to set savings rules, such as automatically diverting one-third of every allowance into savings and help kids track their spending in real time. The goal isn't to lecture, she said. It's to build confidence. When teens feel in control of their money, they make better choices. Jared Polis signs bill aimed at reducing Colorado's rape kit backlog. By Lucas Brady Woods, the Colorado Sun. Governor Jared Polis signed a bill into law June 3rd, launching new efforts to cut down on the state's delays in processing sexual assault evidence kits, including by increasing oversight over the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. Currently, it takes 554 days for the CBI to process DNA evidence kits from sexual assaults, which has left 1,369 cases in limbo as victims and investigators wait for results, according to the agency's latest available data. One of those victims is Democratic State Rep. Jenny Wilford of North Glen, the leading lawmaker behind the new bill. Wilford says she was sexually assaulted over a year ago and filed a police report, but her case was one of the many swallowed up by the backlog. Living this reality is really heavy, said Wilford at the bill signing ceremony Tuesday. It's disorienting and it's dehumanizing. It's like being frozen in time while the rest of the world moves on without you. And no survivor should ever be made to feel this way ever, because that's just not justice. Law enforcement finally issued an arrest warrant for Wilford's alleged attacker last month, more than a year after the incident, after they received the test results from her evidence. The new law is named the Miranda Gordon Justice for Survivors Act of 2025. Gordon is a vocal advocate for sexual assault victims who helped call attention to the backlog after waiting more than a year for the results of her own sexual assault evidence kit. The measure, Senate Bill 304, directs the Attorney General's office to create the Colorado Sexual Assault Forensic Medical Review Board to oversee kit processing and make recommendations for how the state can better address sexual crimes. The group will convene by August 1, and will be made up of sexual assault victim advocates, medical forensic experts, and members of law enforcement. The law also creates a 60-day turnaround goal per DNA evidence kit, three times faster than the state's current 180-day guidance. Polis said he would like to see even faster turnaround times. We always appreciate some room in statute to achieve as much as we can, but my goal would be to turn the tests around in even quicker than 60 days, Polis said. Sexual assault victims will also be entitled to updates on their pending evidence kits every 90 days under the new law. Speaking at Tuesday's signing ceremony, Democratic Senator Mike Weissman of Aurora, the measure's lead sponsor in the Senate, said the bill is about getting sexual assault perpetrators off the street, as well as justice for victims. We can get lost in processes and abstract terms like kits, but what we're talking about here is bringing forward evidence by which we can arrest people who have committed hideous crimes and subject them to appropriate consequences, said Weissman. Without moving through this backlog, we don't have that evidence. There cannot be accountability. Weissman said he and Wilford plan to continue to work on speeding up the backlog reduction during the legislative interim and bring further ideas to the 2026 legislative session. He also suggested the General Assembly could take up the issue during a special legislative session, should one be convened in the coming months. This story was printed through a news-sharing agreement with the Colorado Sun, a journalist-owned nonprofit based in Denver that covers the state. The following advertisement is for Reverse Mortgages Made Easy. Call me to schedule your free confidential in-home review of this unique product, Mike Bruja, Reverse Mortgage Specialist. Cell 720-435-0653. Mike at rmofco.com. 6530 South Yosemite Street, Suite 310, Greenwood Village, Colorado, 80111. Reverse Mortgages of Colorado, helping those in my community with their mortgage needs for over 36 years. The next ad, sell practical marketing solutions to local businesses. Sales territories currently available in various communities. Colorado Community Media. Contact Nick Oliveri for more information. At nick@coloradocommunitymedia.com, 720-505-4635. And the last final ad is for Jacuzzi. Safety-style stress-free installation. Special offer waiving all installation costs with the fine print. Additional terms apply. Offer subject to change and vary by dealer. Expires 6/29/25. Call now, 866-753-2401. And the photograph shows a nicely renovated bathroom with a standing shower. We now move on to stories from the Denver Voice, June issue. Portraying the Human Side, How News Media Covers Homelessness, with a photograph of a man getting a tattoo in what looks to be an RV vehicle, while a woman comforts him and watches the tattoo artist. The caption reads, quote, I go over to their homes and tattoo, and we have a few beers. At the end of the day, I've got a roof over my head and a safe place to sleep, unquote, said tattoo artist Scott Roger. Story by Elizabeth Monahan. Photos by Giles Clausen. In 2022, Elizabeth Bowen, PhD associate professor at the University of Buffalo School of Social Work, and Nicole Capizziello, PhD, released Faceless, Nameless, Invisible, a visual content analysis of photographs and U.S. media coverage about homelessness, which is a study that shows how mainstream media has the power to perpetuate this dehumanization or portray the human side of individuals living on the streets. Focusing on the photographs that appear with stories about homelessness or those experiencing housing instability. Citing a 2006 study by Harris and Fisk on how the stigma of homelessness affects those who are unhoused, Bowen and Capizziello write that one outgrowth of stigma is dehumanization. When members of a group are perceived as not fully human and instead as objects evoking disgust, hatred, or other negative emotions. Recently, Kahlo Radio, which the group describes as a monthly series for local audio creators and admirers, produced a panel hosted by the Denver Press Club on photography's role in telling stories about homelessness. Giles Clausen, a longtime freelance journalist for the Denver Voice, participated in the panel and talked about how, for the past 20 years, he has documented the lives of unhoused individuals in Denver and beyond. Clausen referred to Bowen and Capizziello's study throughout the panel discussion, but two key points from the study were central to his remarks. First, he showed examples of how photography shapes public opinion, and second, that stories on homelessness that use images presenting people as faceless or anonymous reinforce the harmful narrative that individuals experiencing homelessness are less than human, pointing out that photographers must be more mindful when using images to emphasize stories on marginalized communities. Clausen shared some of the guidelines he follows that emphasized why it's important to focus on respect, consent, and dignity of those whose stories he shares. I always ask for the person's permission first, even during sweeps. I walk up to the fence and talk to the people who are positioned where I can see them and ask them if they're willing to tell their story, Clausen said. Asking for permission is critical. So many of the people I've talked to are honestly shocked. Often just showing them the common courtesy they seldom see because I believe they deserve the same respect that I want from people. When I introduce myself, I put my hand out to shake theirs. I don't worry about hands being dirty. Shaking their hand is a sign of respect, and that goes a long, long way with people. After I've introduced myself, I tell them I'm a journalist and name the outlet I'm working on a story for. I know other photographers who won't take photos up close of individuals experiencing homelessness because they feel it's exploitative. To make sure I am not exploiting anyone, I first ask if I can talk to them and photograph them for a story. Before I leave, I thank them for their time, but first I show them the photos in my camera's viewfinder. If there are any they don't like, I don't use them. This approach has allowed Klassen to build trust with many folks living in encampments or tucked away in spaces that are out of the view of foot, car, and bicycle traffic. His work has led him into difficult and sometimes dangerous situations, including interactions with people amid mental health crises and confrontations with law enforcement. Over the years, Klassen has covered how Denver's different mayoral administrations have handled homelessness and how the various mayors have relied on sweeps to remove people staying in encampments. He described the impact of police-led encampment sweeps as deeply traumatic for those being displaced and why he feels he must continue to shed light on how the sweeps are handled. I'm committed to documenting those people who are being treated like cattle. To illustrate the less-than-human perception of unhoused individuals that media outlets help engender, Bowen and Capizzielli's study found that when writing about homelessness, most outlets frequently use images of homelessness paraphernalia, such as remnants of shelters made from cardboard, tents surrounded by piles of trash, or shopping carts, without showing people at all. Such representations can dehumanize and distance the public from the real individuals affected by homelessness. For example, the authors wrote that they noticed that in photos of presumably homeless people who did not show eye contact and were not identified, the photographs were frequently shot from a distance so that a person's face was not clearly visible, shot from behind, shot while a person was looking down or away, and/or shot while a person appeared to be sleeping, often covered with blankets obscuring much of their face and body. Although we cannot be certain, these photographs gave the impression that the photographer did not interact directly with the subject, and that the subject may not have known their photograph was being taken. That's how individuals experiencing homelessness are represented, explained Klassen. In response to this finding, no one is asking for permission or asking if it's okay with them if they have their picture taken. In contrast, Klassen's photos acknowledge his subject's full humanity. There they are facing the camera or going about their daily routines. Whether they are of a couple resting in their RV, children playing soccer in a parking lot next to their encampment, a tattoo artist sitting at a table and inking someone's arm in exchange for a place to sleep, or someone warming their hands by a makeshift fire in a hidden alley, Klassen's images are designed to honor the dignity of his subjects. I spend time talking to people, and my photos are all of humans living in exceptional circumstances. I try to celebrate the people I'm talking with, regardless of whether they're dirty, living in a tent, or sleeping in an alley. I see tragedy in the work I do, but I also hope I'm showing that these people feel the same emotions as those who are housed. They experience joy and sadness, feel love and anger, and deserve to be treated humanely and with respect. There's an accompanying photograph of a man appearing to be homeless with physical damage to his nose. He's looking right into the camera with an intense look on his face. And the quote says, "I'm a nobody," Nailhead said. "But out here, I'm kind of not a nobody. I'm kind of respected. You can't find that everywhere." The next photograph shows a man on a bicycle in the dark, crossing in front of a house. On the handlebars of the bicycle, turned toward him, is a woman riding also on the bike. She's hugging him for stability, and her feet are up on the crossbar. Caption says, "Klassen's work was recently recognized by the Society of Professional Journalists, top of the Rockies Awards. One of the award-winning photos was for his article, Alamosa's Sanctioned Camp Takes Care of Its People, where Christy Buchanan and Ricky Plunkett share a tender moment. The sanctioned camp in Alamosa played a significant role in helping Buchanan and Plunkett get off the street." Next photograph is an African-American couple in what looks like an RV or a camper. The man is laying in bed, and the woman is sitting on the side of the bed looking down forlornly. And the caption reads, "Klassen won a Top of the Rockies award for a photo he took in 2023 of Divine Carter and her husband Cornelius Jenkins in their RV. In this photo, Carter sits on the edge of their bed with Jenkins reclining beside her. Quote, "This RV was the luckiest thing for us, or maybe the best blessing," Jenkins said. We move on to, in your own words, time to stay strong, self, and keep loving self. Article by Raylene Johnson, or it's an editorial by Raylene Johnson, Denver Voice vendor. Well, self, we have to stay strong again. We have two more surgeries coming up. By the end this writing is published, by the time this writing is published, I will already have had one surgery. And I have a second one on June 19th to repair my hand from surgery on it last year that didn't go well. We have to keep our spirits up. Things in life don't always go smoothly, and when the rocky road starts coming your way, you need to be able to handle the bumps that will be on the road. I did not know how strong I really was until after going through the cancer and surgeries last year. I'm a lot stronger than I really gave myself credit for. You have to keep telling yourself you can make it, even if it's only for that moment or that day that you survive, and give yourself credit that you were able to get through it. You cannot give up when hard times come your way. Challenges will always come our way, but it's how we handle the situation that determines whether we'll actually get through it or not. We cannot give up on ourselves, because once you give up on yourself, you have defeated yourself. I choose today not to defeat myself by saying I can't, or it's too hard, or I don't think I can. Thoughts like that have a way of defeating us, making it very hard for us to continue moving forward. When the negativities come into your head, you have to release them immediately, because that is just the enemy trying to mess with you and trying to destroy your spirit. I choose today to let no one destroy my spirit, and if I don't let anyone else destroy my spirit, why would I do it to myself? We are the only ones that can be strong for ourselves. You are worth being loved today. You are worth having good people around you. You are definitely worth loving yourself. If you can't find love for yourself, get help, because your spirit is very lost, and you have to find your way back to yourself. Finding oneself is not always easy. It took me many, many years to be able to find my true self. It's amazing how good you can feel when you find your true self. I know today that I am worthy of all good things that come my way. I thank my higher power for the trip that I made last month for my first speaking engagement, which was in Alabama. I had four beautiful days of speaking engagements, and it went very well. Very well. I got to talk to the mayor of the town I was in, and he's interested in getting street paper started there. I got to speak at a woman's shelter to women with their children. I got to talk at a rehab center because I'm now 17 years clean of crack, cocaine, and alcohol. I even got to speak to a church that creates prayer shawls for people dealing with cancer. I got to share my story of survival with them. I also was able to lay hands on the shawls, and everybody prayed over them. Then they honored me with the prayer shawl, and I picked a beautiful purple and blue one. When you wrap yourself in it, you can actually feel the love, because from the first stitch to the last, the people making them are praying for the person who will receive it to have love, peace, and healing all woven into the shawl. I cannot believe I had my first speaking engagement, and it went so well. I'm looking forward to many more to come in the future. Just know that no matter what you're going through, even if it feels like hell itself, once you come out of that, you will be powerful testimony to someone else who needs to hear kind words or loving thoughts from somebody else who has experienced hell. When you see someone else that is going through something really hard and has come out of it, know that you too can come out of it. You can't feel that you can come out of it if the person telling you has not struggled with anything you're going through. It won't work that way. You have to advocate for yourself and find the right people to help you if you need it. I just can't believe, self, how far we've come. And I'm looking forward to the journey that we are on to continue. May everyone who's reading my words truly love themselves and truly expect the best for themselves. I love you, self. Thank you for being strong. We'll end with calling all volunteers. We are looking for volunteers to help us at community events or to assist with paper distribution and basic office administration at our office, 989 Santa Fe Drive. If you are interested and would like to know more, contact us at program@denvervoice.org. That's all the time we have this week. Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matt.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.